Welcome to Womance's public access read-along of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. I'm your even chapter reader, Isabeau.
I'm the odd chapter reader, Morgan.
And this week, we are reading chapter 46, the great rumored dragon sex on page episode. For those of you who are just tuning in, that joke won't make any sense. I recommend that you go back to chapter 45. Speaking of chapter 45, Morgan, will you remind us what happened other than dragon peen?
Yeah, dragon peen actually didn't happen in chapter 45. I'm not going to lie to the listeners just to get them to go back and re-listen to the episode. I'm not one of those people who alleges there's dragon sex when there's not dragon sex. There's no dragon peen in chapter 45.
We have morals.
Yeah, that is a principle, and that is a core value of the podcast. We do not misrepresent the nature of dragon lovers on page. I just gave Isabeau a meaningful look.
I accepted it fully, understood every nuance.
She did like a little nod. Like, she got it. She got it. All right, well, chapter 45, what did happen is that Lizzie and her aunt and uncle, who are on this big trip, went to Pemberley again so her uncle could go fly fishing on the river. Maybe he just dropped line. I don't know. And then her and her aunt went and hung out with Miss Darcy and Miss Bingley and this other lady, Ansley. And they chatted, and it was awkward. Like, Miss Bingley is pissed. Miss Darcy is shy. Miss Bennet, Lizzie, is all up in her own head. But thank goodness Miss Ansley was there. And then Darcy finds out that they're all hanging out, having a weird time probably. He wants to make sure his sister's doing well, and also maybe one guest in particular. And so he hustles back into the drawing room, and things go better. And Lizzie thinks about how much she likes him, and then she leaves, and he gets into it with Miss Bingley, who tries to be like, she's like not even pretty, and you said she wasn't even pretty. And he's like, well, I changed my mind, and I think she's the prettiest. And that was pretty cool. And then Lizzie and her aunt talked about everything but Mr. Darcy, even that both though they both really wanted to talk about Mr. Darcy. And that was that.
Perfect. Chapter 46. Elizabeth had been a good deal disappointed in not finding a letter from Jane on their first arrival at Lambton. And this disappointment had been renewed on each of the mornings that had now been spent there. But on the third, her repining was over, and her sister justified by the receipt of two letters from her at once, on one of which was marked that it had been missent elsewhere. Elizabeth was not surprised at it, as Jane had written the direction remarkably ill. They had just been preparing to walk as the letters came, and her uncle and aunt, leaving her to enjoy them in quiet, set off by themselves. The one missent must be first attended to. It had been written 5 days ago. The beginning contained an account of all their little parties and engagements, with such news as the country afforded. But the latter half, which was dated a day later and written in evident agitation, gave more important intelligence. It was to this effect.
Before we read the letter, I do want to acknowledge that Jane Austen defended the Postal Service.
Yeah.
Took the time to be like, it was Jane's fault. Or maybe like someone gave her the feedback like, Jane's too perfect. And she's like, all right, I've got to have a delayed letter.
Her writing is bad when she's agitated.
Yeah, actually, she's not perfect. Her penmanship is kind of bad.
Since writing the above, dearest Lizzie, something has occurred of a most unexpected and serious nature, but I'm afraid of alarming you. Be assured that we are all well. What I have to say relates to poor Lydia. An express came at 12 last night, just as we were all gone to bed, from Colonel Forster to inform us that she was gone off to Scotland with one of his officers, to own the truth with Wickham. Imagine our surprise. To Kitty, however, does not seem so wholly unexpected. I'm very, very sorry. So imprudent a match on both sides, but I am willing to hope the best and that his character has been misunderstood.
Oh my God!
thoughtless and indiscreet, I can easily believe him. But this step, and let us rejoice over it, marks nothing bad at heart. His choice is disinterested at least, for he must know my father can give her nothing. Our poor mother is sadly grieved. My father bears it better. How thankful am I that we never let them know what has been said against him. We must forget it ourselves. They were off Saturday night about 12, as is conjectured, but were not missed till yesterday morning at 8. The express was sent off directly. My dear Lizzie, they must have passed within 10 miles of us. Colonel Forster gives us reason to expect him here soon. Lydia left a few lines for his wife informing her of their intention. I must conclude, for I cannot be long for my poor mother. I'm afraid you will not be able to make it out, but I hardly know what I have written. Without allowing herself time for consideration and scarcely knowing what she felt, Elizabeth, on finishing this letter, instantly seized the other and, opening it with the utmost impatience, read as follows. It had been written a day later than the conclusion of the first. By this time, my dearest sister, you've received my hurried letter. I wish this may be more intelligible. Oh my God. Though not confined for time. My head is so bewildered that I cannot answer for being coherent. Dearest Lizzie, I hardly know what I would write, but I have bad news for you, and it cannot be delayed. Imprudent as the marriage between Mr. Wickham and our poor Lydia would be, we are now anxious to be assured that it has taken place, for there is but too much reason to fear they are not gone to Scotland. Colonel Forster came yesterday, having left Brighton the day before, not many hours after the express, though Lydia's short letter to Mrs. F. gave them to understand that they were going to Gretna Green. Something was dropped by Denny expressing his belief that W. never intended to go there or to marry Lydia at all, which was repeated to Colonel F., who, instantly taking the alarm, set off from B, intending to trace their route. He did trace them easily to Clapham, but no further, for on entering that place, they were moved into a hackney coach and dismissed the chaise that brought them from Epsom. All that is known after this, that they were seen to continue the London road. I know not what to think. After making every possible inquiry on that side London, Colonel F. came into Hertfordshire, anxiously renewing them at all the turnpikes and at the inns in Barnet and Hatfield, but without any success. No such people had been seen to pass through. With the kindest concern, he came to Longbourn and broke his apprehensions to us in a manner most creditable to his heart. I am sincerely grieved for him and Mrs. F. But no one can throw any blame on them.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. And I am going to.
They were
bad chaperones. Babies watching babies. Absolutely not.
Our distress, my dear Lizzie, is very great. My father and mother believe the worst, but I cannot think so ill of him. Many circumstances might make it more eligible for them to be married privately in town than to pursue their first plan. And even if he could form such a design against a young woman of Lydia's connections, which is not likely, can I suppose her so lost to everything? Yes. Impossible.
God, what in the world? Like, this is,
it's like Jane is so self-deluded.
Yeah, and like, this is the thing. It's like, if you live your life being like, everyone has an equal perspective, like, stuff's gonna go wrong, someone's gonna do something cruel and or stupid, and then you're just gonna be like left scrambling.
This is scrambling.
Trust no one. Right. Ever. Otherwise, you're going to look stupid like Jane does in this letter.
Jane looks so dumb.
Oh, what is it for? Your happiness? Oh, are you happy? Because I hope it was worth it. I hope your brief moment of happiness was worth it, because now you're confused about your sister getting eloped.
But also, like, can I suppose her so lost to everything? It's like, it sounds like an adventure to Lydia. Of course Lydia would 100% go off with Wickham. What the fuck are you thinking? Do you even know Lydia?
Isabel, that's such a good point. It's a real lack of empathy.
Yeah.
To be like, how bad could this get? It's like, I don't know. Think about it.
Like, think about Lydia for 10 seconds and like, yeah, what she's like. She let everyone believe that she paid for the lunch that you and Lizzie paid for.
Be real.
Like, this isn't a person who's thinking long term.
That is still absolutely the best chapter in this book.
It's so good. It's so funny. So funny. Impossible. I grieve to find, however, that Colonel F. is not disposed to depend upon their marriage. He shook his head when I expressed my hopes and said he feared W. is not a man to be trusted. My poor mother is really ill and keeps her room. Could she exert herself, it would be better. But this is not to be expected. And as to my father, I never in my life saw him so affected. Poor Kitty has anger for having concealed their attachment. But it was a matter of confidence one cannot wonder. I'm truly glad, dearest Lizzie, that you have been spared something of these distressing scenes. But now, as the first shock is over, shall I own that I long for your return? I am not so selfish, however, as to press it, if inconvenient. Adieu. I take upon my pen again to do what I have just told you I would not, but circumstances are such that I cannot help earnestly begging you all to come here as soon as possible. I know my dear uncle and aunt so well that I am not afraid of requesting it, though I still have something more to ask of the former. My father is going to London with Colonel Forster instantly to try to discover her. What he means to do, I'm not sure. I'm sure I know not, but his excessive distress will not allow him to pursue any measure in the best and safest way, and Colonel Forster is obliged to be at Brighton again tomorrow evening. In such an exigence, my uncle's advice and assistance would be everything in the world. He'll be immediately comprehend what I must feel. I rely upon his goodness. Oh, where is my uncle? Cried Elizabeth, darting from her seat as she finished the letter, an eagerness to follow him without losing a moment of the time so precious. But as she reached the door, it was opened by a servant, and Mr. Darcy appeared. Her pale face and impetuous manner made him start, and before he could recover himself enough to speak, she, in whose mind every idea was superseded by Lydia's situation, hastily exclaimed, "I beg your pardon, but I must leave you. I must find Mr. Gardiner this moment on business that cannot be delayed. I have not an instant to lose." "Good God! What is the matter?" cried he, with more feeling than politeness, then recollected himself. "I will not detain you a minute, but let me, or let the servant go after Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner. You are not well enough. You cannot go yourself." Elizabeth hesitated, but her knees trembled under her, and she felt how little would be gained by her attempting to pursue them. Calling back the servant, therefore, she commissioned him, though in so breathless an accent as made her almost unintelligible, to fetch his master and mistress home instantly. On his quitting the room, she sat down, unable to support herself, and looking so miserably ill that it was impossible for Darcy to leave her, or to refrain from saying anything, in a tone of gentleness and commiseration. "Let me call your maid. Is there nothing you could take to give you present relief? A glass of wine? Shall I get you one? You are very ill." "No, I thank you," she replied, endeavoring to recover herself. There's nothing the matter with me. I'm quite well. I'm only distressed by some dreadful news, which I have just received from Longbourn." She burst into tears as she alluded to it, and for a few minutes could not speak another word. Darcy, in wretched suspense, could only say something indistinctly of his concern and observe her in compassionate silence. At length she spoke again. "I've just had a letter from Jane. With such dreadful news, it cannot be concealed from anyone. My youngest sister has left all friends, has eloped, has thrown herself into the power of Mr. Wickham. They're gone off together from Brighton. You know him too well to doubt the rest. She has no money, no connections, nothing that can tempt him to. She is lost forever." Darcy was fixed in astonishment. "When I consider," she added in a yet more agitated voice, "that I might have prevented it, I who knew what he was, and I but explained some part of it only, some part of what I learnt to my family. Had his character been known, this could not have happened. But it is all too late now."
"I am grieved indeed," cried Darcy. "Grieved, shocked. But it is certain? Absolutely certain. Oh yes, they left Brighton together on Sunday night, and were traced almost to London, but not beyond. They are certainly not gone to Scotland." "And what has been done? What has been attempted to recover her?"
"My father has gone to London, and Jane has written to beg my uncle's immediate assistance, and we shall be off, I hope, in half an hour. But nothing can be done. I know very well that nothing can be done. How is such a man to be worked on? How are they even to be discovered? I have not the smallest hope. It is every way horrible."
Darcy shook his head in silent acquiescence.
"When my eyes were opened to his real character, oh, had I known what I ought, what I dared to do, but I knew not. I was afraid of doing too much. Wretched, wretched mistake."
Darcy made no answer. He seemed scarcely to hear her, and was walking up and down the room in earnest meditation, his brow contracted, his air gloomy. Elizabeth soon observed and instantly understood it. Her power was sinking.
Everything must sink under such a proof of family weakness, such an assurance of the deepest disgrace. She could neither wonder nor condemn, but the belief of his self-conquest brought nothing consolatory to her bosom, afforded no palliation in her distress. It was, on the contrary, exactly calculated to make her understand her own wishes. Never had she so honestly felt that she could have loved him as now, when all love must be vain. But self, though it would intrude, could not engross her. Lydia, the humiliation, the misery she was bringing on them all, soon swallowed up every private care, and covering her face with her handkerchief, Elizabeth was soon lost to everything else, and after a pause of several minutes was only recalled to a sense of her situation by the voice of her companion, who in a manner which, though it spoke compassion, spoke likewise restraint, said, "I'm afraid you've long been desiring my absence, nor have I anything to plead in excuse of my stay, but real though unavailing concern. Would to heaven that anything could be either said or done on my part that might offer consolation to such distress. But I will not torment you with vain wishes, which may seem purposely to ask for your thanks. This unfortunate affair will, I fear, prevent my sisters having the pleasure of seeing you at Pemberley today." "Oh yes, be so kind as to apologize for us to Miss Darcy. Say that urgent business calls us home immediately. Conceal the unhappy truth as long as it is possible. I know it cannot be long." He readily assured her of his secrecy, again expressed his sorrow for her distress, wished it a happier conclusion than there was at present reason to hope, and leaving his compliments for her relations with only one serious parting look, went away. As he quitted the room, Elizabeth felt how improbable it was that they should ever see each other again on such terms of cordiality as had marked their several meetings in Derbyshire, and as she threw a retrospective glance over the whole of their acquaintance, so full of contradictions and varieties, sighed at the perverseness of these feelings, which would now have promoted its continuance and would formerly have rejoiced in its termination. If gratitude and esteem are good foundations of affection, Elizabeth's change of sentiment will be neither improbable nor faulty. But if otherwise, if the regard springing from such sources is unreasonable or unnatural in comparison of what is so often described as arising on a first interview with its object, and even before two words have been exchanged, nothing can be said in her defense, except that she had given somewhat of a trial to the latter method. In her partiality for Wickham, and that its ill success might perhaps authorize her to seek the other less interesting mode of attachment. Be that as it may, she saw him go with regret, and in this early example of what Lydia's infamy must produce, found additional anguish as she reflected on that wretched business. Never since reading Jane's second letter had she entertained a hope of Wickham's meaning to marry her.
Oof.
No one but Jane, she thought, could flatter herself with such an expectation. Surprise. No one but Jane.
Call him like you see him, you know?
Yeah. Surprise was the least of her feelings on this development. While the contents of the first letter remained on her mind, she was all surprise, all astonishment, that Wickham should marry a girl whom it was impossible he could marry for money, and how Lydia could ever have attached him had appeared incomprehensible, but now it was all too natural. For such an attachment as this, she might have sufficient charms, and though she did not suppose Lydia to be deliberately engaging in an elopement without the intention of marriage, she had no difficulty in believing that neither her virtue nor her understanding would preserve her from falling as easy prey. She had never perceived, while the regiment was in Hertfordshire, that Lydia had any partiality for him, but she was convinced that Lydia had wanted only encouragement to attach herself to anybody. Sometimes one officer, sometimes another, had been her favorite, as their attentions raised them in her opinion. Her attentions had been continually fluctuating, but never without an object, the mischief of neglect and mistaken indulgence towards such a girl. Oh, how acutely did she now feel it.
Ugh.
She was wild to be home, to hear, to see, to be upon the spot, to share with Jane in the cares that must now fall wholly upon her in a family so deranged, a father absent, a mother incapable of exertion and requiring constant attendance. And though almost persuaded that nothing could be done for Lydia, her uncle's interference seemed to be the utmost importance. Until he entered the room, the misery of her impatience was severe. Mr. and Mrs. Gardner had hurried back in alarm, supposing by the servant's account that their niece was taken suddenly ill, but satisfying them instantly on that head, she eagerly communicated the cause of their summons, reading the two letters aloud and dwelling on the postscript at the last with trembling energy.
Though Lydia had never been a favorite with them, Mr. and Mrs. Gardner could not but be deeply affected. Not Lydia only, but all were concerned in it. And after the first exclamations of surprise and horror, Mr. Gardner readily promised every assistance in his power. Elizabeth, though, expecting no less, thanked him with tears of gratitude, and all three being actuated by one spirit, everything relating to their journey was speedily settled. They were to be off as soon as possible. "But what is to be done about Pemberley?" cried Mrs. Gardner. John told us Mr. Darcy was here when you sent for us. Was it so?" "Yes, and I told him we should not be able to keep our engagement. That is all settled."
"That is all settled," repeated the other as she ran into the room to prepare. "And are they upon such terms as for her to disclose the real truth? Oh, that I knew how it was." But wishes were vain, or at best could serve only to amuse her in the hurrying confusion of the following hour. Had Elizabeth been at leisure to be idle, she would have remained certain that all employment was impossible to one so wretched as herself, but she had her share of business as well as her aunt, and amongst the rest there were notes to be written to all their friends in Lambton, with false excuses for their sudden departure. An hour, however, saw the whole completed, and Mr. Gardner, meanwhile, having settled his account at the inn, nothing remained to be done but to go. And Elizabeth, after all the misery of the morning, found herself, in a shorter space of time than she could have supposed, seated in the carriage and on the road to Longbourn.
What a distressing chapter.
Lots happened.
It feels like kind of the crest of the personality problems and also growth, personal growth journeys we've been on throughout the reading experience. I think we realize here how much Lizzie has changed since the beginning of the novel and how little Jane has. And that's kind of distressing. Jane is kind of like doubling down on her obnoxious positivity.
Dare we even say toxic positivity?
I dare. I think it's truly toxic now. And it sucks that Lizzie feels like she has to be there to, she feels all this need to like be the person of action in this situation.
Even though all she can do is go home and like help take care of Mrs. Bennet, which is also wild because like Mary and Kitty are there, but there's literally nothing in Jane's letter or in Elizabeth's reaction to it to account for Kitty and Mary as being like able-bodied helpers in a crisis like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, because they're not.
Right.
Right. And it turns out like neither is Jane. Like all Jane could do is like write to Lizzie.
Yeah.
Lizzie, I fear is the burrow, the pack animal, the beast of burden in her family.
I think Jane might serve as like the emotional pack animal. I think that like that's part of the reason why she's caretaking everyone at Longbourn. It's probably not just Mrs. Bennet. She's probably also caretaking Mary and Kitty and also the Gardner's children. And like, it seems to me that like Jane is really asking for Lizzie's help, right? Like Jane herself is overwhelmed. And like, that makes sense to me.
Begging for it.
Right. And especially with Mr. Bennet gone to London, and there's this real fear about like what he might do and like what his rash action might look like. There's a real sense of threat.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, how many times has Mr. Bennet fucking been to London? Like, not only is there a threat of like what he might do, but like also might what befall him.
It's a tough situation here. It's a tough situation for the Bennet girls, the Bennet gang.
Yeah. I also love that, like, Mr. Darcy was just, like, at the door and, like, you know, she opens it and, like, there he is. And she's, like, all distraught and looks terrible. And he's like, oh, my God. It's the worst moment to be seen by your crush.
I also love that he's like, so I guess you can't come over then.
You can't
come I guess over. I have to tell my sister that you can't come over then. Do you think he was going to plan a move? Like, he's going to be like, oh, like, let's go in the carriage together since you're coming over anyway.
Yeah, I think, like, Darcy really saw this as, like, a sort of...
He'd, like, built up his courage and now tragedy has befallen.
Exactly. Like, he comes alone. He doesn't, like, send her a letter. Mm-hmm. He doesn't, like, send a servant. He, like, he shows up at the inn himself to, like...
I think he was going to try to touch her knee in the carriage.
Or maybe not, it'll just, like, brush his knee against hers and, like...
Yeah, let's workshop this. We've got knee brushing, knee touching, maybe, like, a casual, like, shoulder bump. Like, oh, it's so rickety. It's such a rough ride to Pimberley. Up, our shoulders touch.
Oh, he would never presume to sit next to her. Absolutely not. He would never. No. They're sitting on opposite benches. He'd take the one that's rear facing so that she wouldn't get sick, because he's a gentleman. And I'm sure he'd like practice like little bon mots to, like, you know,
that all the ladies find agreeable. He's taken a little page out of.
Exactly. He's like, these were arrived chiefly from the occasion, but I, you know, I'm not going to flatter myself and say I didn't practice.
Do you think, I think even if they're sitting across from each other, yeah, knee stuff, foot mm-hmm. stuff is going to be more obvious. But maybe he could do like a big lean forward and curve point out of the window and touch a boob.
I don't think Mr. Darcy would do that. I also don't think he's like thinking about this, like, because he.
I think he's been thinking about it for a long time.
I think he's been thinking about touching your boobs for a long time. But I think like Darcy's whole thing here is like he still feels unsure of Elizabeth's changed feeling. Like, let's not forget, he proposed 6 months ago and she was like, under no circumstances, asshole.
Was that 6 months ago? I'm pretty sure it was 48 hours ago.
It was some months. And so like this like denouement, this like softening, I don't think he knows the depths of it. I don't think he's like, he trusts it. He's excited about it. But I think he feels as insecure as Lizzie does about it. And like, that's very clear from his like.
It's so cute.
It's fucking adorable. It's the cutest thing in the world. And so I think he's on unsure footing. And like, I think part of his like showing up to the Lambton Inn to like invite her over himself is like, he's trying to create these circumstances where he can like gauge her interest.
Yeah.
And like also maybe like help it along and be like, look, I have taken on board the things that you said.
Yeah.
Like in much the same way that Miss Bingley's cruel feedback is like a roast that is maybe useful. Elizabeth's deeply mean refusal of his proposal, like he's been taking that feedback on board.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wish we could spend more time with them. I am extremely irritated with Wickham and Lydia for taking us out of Pimberley. Because obviously the gardeners won't be able to continue their lovemaking fest at Lambton Inn. And the whole dragon shifter thing, I don't really know. I guess he could like fly to London and set Wickham on fire. But obviously Jane doesn't want that to happen. Because she's worried about her dad like slapping him in the face or something.
And then getting shot. In a duel?
When Jane says she's worried about what he's going to do. Yeah, I guess a duel would be the main concern there.
I think Jane's worries like go in both directions of the spectrum, where she's worried that like Mr. Bennet will find him and then like challenge him to a duel and then die.
Yeah.
And she's worried that like he won't find Wickham at all. You know, get murdered. Like, you know what I mean?
get mugged. It sucks to get mugged. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He'll get mugged. He'll like lose all his money by a pickpocket. Like he doesn't go to London, and like whatever Jane knows about town doesn't seem like particularly nuanced.
Yeah, she's someone who lives outside of Chicago
in Naperville,
not wanting to come visit you in Chicago. All right. Well, I'm really excited for the next chapter.
Same.
I'm ready to go. With that.
Loosen your prejudices?
Why would you loosen your prejudices? Never your pride. Never your prejudices. You loosen your prejudices, you're no better than Jane.
You gotta loosen them a bit, though, because, like, not all of them are good.
No, hold your... Well, okay, loosen your racial prejudice.
Then maybe your class prejudices?
Tighten your hot army officer prejudices.
Yeah, that's
tighten
true.
Those right up.
Yeah, straight up the line. A uniform does not make a person good.
No, in fact, most of the time it makes them worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's been proven.
Statistically and categorically.
Yes.
Mwah!
Mwah! Woly guacamole, everyone! Thanks for listening to another episode of Womance.
Womance is hosted, produced, and edited by my friend Morgan.
And by my friend Isabel. Our logo artwork is by another friend, Mary Reichman. You can find her on Instagram at m.reichman, spelled R-E-I-S-C-H-M-A-N-N.
Original music by Nick Gravlin. And our web mistress is Jane Bonsack. They're the best.
You're also the best. We so appreciate your support by listening. Please consider taking this to the next level by following, rating, and reviewing. We read every single review. Or even check us out on Patreon.
If you'd like more woe in your life, you can connect with us on Instagram at womance and on Twitter where we are at @mance_woe. Or you can find more episodes and content at womancepodcast.com.
If you have an idea or just want to reach out, please email womancemail@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Womance is a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to add to your romance collection at frolic.media/podcasts. Until next time.
Woly guacamole, everyone! Thanks for listening to another episode of Womance.
Womance is hosted, produced, and edited by my friend Morgan.
And by my friend Isabel. Our logo artwork is by another friend, Mary Reichman. You can find her on Instagram at m.reichman, spelled R-E-I-S-C-H-M-A-N-N.
Original music by Nick Gravlin. And our web mistress is Jane Bonsack. They're the best.
You're also the best. We so appreciate your support by listening. Please consider taking this to the next level by following, rating, and reviewing. We read every single review. Or even check us out on Patreon.
If you'd like more woe in your life, you can connect with us on Instagram at womance and on Twitter where we are at @mance_woe. Or you can find more episodes and content at womancepodcast.com.
If you have an idea or just want to reach out, please email womancemail@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Womance is a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to add to your romance collection at frolic.media/podcasts. Until next time.